well, but... Harry, Draco said, you've obviously got incredible talent, but you've got no training, and no mentors, and you do stupid things sometimes, and you really need an advisor who knows how to do this, or you're going to get hurt. Draco's face was fierce. Ah, Harry said. An advisor. Like Lucius? Like me, said Draco. I'll promise to keep your secrets from father, from everyone. I'll just help you figure out whatever you want to do. Wow. Harry saw that Zombie Quirrell was staggering in through the doors. Class is about to start, said Harry. I'll think about what you said. There's lots of times I do wish I had all your training. It's just I don't know how I can trust you so quickly. You shouldn't, Draco said. It's too soon. See? I'll give you good advice, even if it hurts me. But we should maybe hurry up and become closer friends. I'm open to that, said Harry, who was already trying to figure out how to exploit it. Another bit of advice, Draco said hurriedly as Quirrell slouched toward his desk. Right now, everyone in Slytherin's wondering about you, so if you're courting us, which I think you are, you should do something that signals friendship to Slytherin. Soon. Like today. Or tomorrow. Letting Severus go on awarding extra house points to Slytherin wasn't enough. No reason Harry couldn't take credit for it. Draco's eyes flickered with realization. Then he said rapidly, It's not the same, trust me. It's got to be something obvious. Push your mudblood rival Granger into a wall or something. Everyone in Slytherin will know what that means. That's not how it works in Ravenclaw, Draco. If you have to push someone into a wall, it means your brain is too weak to beat them the right way, and everyone in Ravenclaw knows that. The screen on Harry's desk flickered on, provoking a sudden wash of nostalgia for television and computers. Ahem! Said Professor Quirrell's voice, seeming to speak personally to Harry out of the screen. Please take your seats. And the children were all seated and staring at the repeater screens on their desks, or looking down directly at the great white marble stage where Professor Quirrell stood, leaning on his desk atop the small dais of darker marble. Today, said Professor Quirrell, I had planned to teach you your first defensive spell, a small shield that was the ancestor of today's Protego. But on second thought, I have changed today's lesson plan in the light of recent events. Professor Quirrell's gaze searched the rows of seats. Harry winced from where he was sitting in the back row. He had a feeling he knew who was about to be called on. Draco of the noble and most ancient House of Malfoy, said Professor Quirrell. Phew! Yes, Professor, said Draco. His voice was amplified, seeming to come from the repeater screen on Harry's desk, which showed Draco's face as he spoke. Then the screen shifted back to Professor Quirrell, who said, Is it your ambition to become the next Dark Lord? That's an odd question, Professor, said Draco. I mean, who'd be dumb enough to admit it? A few students laughed, but not many. Indeed, said Professor Quirrell. So, while there's no point in asking any of you, It would not surprise me in the slightest if there was a student or two in my classes who harbored ambitions of being the next Dark Lord. After all, I wanted to be the next Dark Lord when I was a young Slytherin." This time the laughter was much more widespread. "Well, it is the house of the ambitious, after all," Professor Quirrell said, smiling. "I didn't realize until later that what I really enjoyed was battle magic, and that my true ambition was to become a great fighting wizard and someday teach at Hogwarts. In any case, when I was 13 years old, I read through the historical sections of the Hogwarts Library, scrutinizing the lives and fates of past Dark Lords, and I made a list of all the mistakes that I would never make when I was a Dark Lord." Harry giggled before he could stop himself. "Yes, Mr. Potter, very amusing. So, Mr. Potter, can you guess what was the very first item on that list?"
"Great.
Never use a complicated way of dealing with an enemy when you could just abracadabra them." "The term, Mr. Potter, is Avada Kedavra." Professor Quirrell's voice sounded a bit sharp for some reason. "And no, that was not on the list I made at age 13. Would you care to guess again?"
Never brag to anyone about your evil master plan."
Professor Quirrell laughed. "Ha! Now, that was number two. My, Mr. Potter, have we been reading the same books?" There was more laughter, with an undertone of nervousness. Harry clenched his jaw tightly shut and said nothing. A denial would accomplish nothing. "But no, the first item was, I will not go around provoking strong, vicious enemies. The history of the world would be very different if Monolith Falconsbane or Hitler had grasped that elementary point. Now, if, Mr. Potter, just if by some chance you harbor an ambition similar to the one I held as a young Slytherin, even so, I hope it is not your ambition to become a stupid Dark Lord."
"Professor Quirrell,"
Harry said, gritting his teeth,
"I am a Ravenclaw, and it is not my ambition to be stupid, period. I know that what I did today was dumb, but it wasn't dark. I was not the one who threw the first punch in that fight."
"You, Mr. Potter, are an idiot, but then so was I at your age. Thus, I anticipated your answer and altered today's lesson plan accordingly. Mr. Gregory Goyle, if you would come forward, please." There was a surprised pause in the classroom. Harry hadn't been expecting that. Neither, from the looks of it, had Mr. Goyle, who looked rather uncertain and worried as he mounted the marble stage and approached the dais. Professor Quirrell straightened from where he was leaning on the desk. He looked suddenly stronger, and his hands formed fists, and he drew himself up into a clearly recognizable martial arts stance. Harry's eyes widened at the sight, and he realized why Mr. Goyle had been called up.
"Most wizards," Professor Quirrell said, "do not bother much with what a muggle would term martial arts. Is not a wand stronger than a fist?
This attitude is stupid. Wands are held in fists. If you want to be a great fighting wizard, you must learn martial arts to a level which would impress even a muggle. I will now demonstrate a certain vitally important technique which I learned in a dojo, a muggle school of martial arts, of which I shall speak more shortly. For now...
Professor Quirrell took several steps forward, still in stance, advancing on where Mr. Goyle stood.
Mr. Goyle, I will ask you to attack me.
Professor Quirrell,
said Mr. Goyle, his voice now amplified as the professor's was,
can I ask what level?
Sixth Dan. You will not be hurt, and neither will I. And if you see an opening, please take it.
Mr. Goyle nodded, looking much relieved.
Note, Professor Quirrell said, that Mr. Goyle was afraid to attack someone who did not know martial arts to an acceptable level, for fear that I, or he, would be hurt. Mr. Goyle's attitude is exactly correct, and he has earned 3 Quirrell points for it. Now, fight!
The young boy blurred forward, fists flying, and the professor blocked every blow, dancing backward. Quirrell kicked, and Goyle blocked and spun, and tried to trip Quirrell with a sweeping leg, and Quirrell hopped over it, and it was all happening too fast for Harry to make sense of what was going on. And then Goyle was on his back with his legs pushing, and Quirrell was actually flying through the air, and then he hit the ground shoulder first and rolled...
Stop!
Cried Professor Quirrell from the ground, sounding a little panicked.
You win!
Mr. Goyle pulled up so sharply he staggered, almost tripping and falling from the aborted momentum of his headlong charge toward Professor Quirrell. His face showed utter shock. Professor Quirrell arched his back and bounced to his feet, using a peculiar spring motion that made no use of his hands. There was a silence in the classroom, a silence born of total confusion.
Mr. Goyle, said Professor Quirrell, what vitally important technique did I demonstrate?
How to fall correctly when someone froze you,
said Mr. Goyle.
It's one of the very first lessons you learnt.
That, too,
said Professor Quirrell. There was a pause.
The vitally important technique which I demonstrated, said Professor Quirrell, was how to lose. You may go, Mr. Goyle. Thank you.
Mr. Goyle walked off the platform, looking rather bewildered. Harry felt the same way. Professor Quirrell walked back to his desk and resumed leaning on it.
Sometimes we forget the most basic things, since it has been too long since we learned them. I realized I had done the same thing with my own lesson plan. You do not teach students to throw until you have taught them to fall. And I must not teach you to fight if you do not understand how to lose.
Professor Quirrell's face hardened, and Harry thought he saw a hint of pain, a touch of sorrow in those eyes.
I learned how to lose in a dojo in Asia, which, as any muggle knows, is where all the good martial artists live. This dojo taught a style which had a reputation among fighting wizards as adapting well to magical dueling. The master of that dojo, an old man by Muggle standards, was that style's greatest living teacher. He had no idea that magic existed, of course. I applied to study there, and was one of the few students accepted that year, from among many contenders, There might have been a tiny bit of special influence involved."
There was some laughter in the classroom. Harry didn't share it. That hadn't been right at all.
"In any case, during one of my first fights, after I had been beaten in a particularly humiliating fashion, I lost control and attacked my sparring partner.
Yikes!
Thankfully, with my fists rather than my magic, the master, surprisingly, did not expel me on the spot. But he told me that there was a flaw in my temperament. He explained it to me, and I knew he was right. And then he said that I would learn how to lose."
Professor Quirrell's face was expressionless.
"Upon his strict orders, all of the students of the dojo lined up. One by one, they approached me. I was not to defend myself. I was only to beg for mercy. One by one, they slapped me or punched me and pushed me to the ground. Some of them spat on me. They called me awful names in their language. And to each one, I had to say, 'I lose.' And similar such things, such as, 'I beg you to stop,' and 'I admit you're better than me.'"
Harry was trying to imagine this and simply failing. There was no way something like that could have happened to the dignified Professor Quirrell.
"I was a prodigy of battle magic. Even then, with wandless magic alone, I could have killed everyone in that dojo. I did not do so. I learned to lose. To this day, I remember it as one of the most unpleasant hours of my life. And when I left that dojo 8 months later, which was not nearly enough time, but was all I could afford to spend, the master told me that he hoped I understood why that had been necessary. And I told him that it was one of the most valuable lessons I had ever learned, which was, and is, true."
Professor Quirrell's face turned bitter.
"You are wondering where this marvelous dojo is, and whether you can study there. You cannot, for not long afterward, another would-be student came to that hidden place, to that remote mountain. He who must not be named."
There was the sound of many breaths being drawn in simultaneously. Harry felt sick to his stomach. He knew what was coming.
"The Dark Lord came to that school openly, without disguise, glowing red eyes and all. The students tried to bar his way, and he simply apparated through. There was terror there, but discipline, and the master came forth. And the Dark Lord demanded, not asked, but demanded to be taught."
Professor Quirrell's face was very hard.
"Perhaps the master had read too many books telling the lie that a true martial artist could defeat even demons. For whatever reason, the master refused. The Dark Lord asked why he could not be a student. The master told him he had no patience. And that was when the Dark Lord ripped his tongue out."
There was a collective gasp.
"You can guess what happened next. The students tried to rush the Dark Lord and fell over, stunned where they stood,
And then? Professor Quirrell's voice faltered for a moment, then resumed.
There is an unforgivable curse. The Cruciatus curse, which produces unbearable pain. If the Cruciatus is extended for longer than a few minutes, it produces permanent insanity. One by one, the Dark Lord crucioed the Master's students into insanity, and then finished them off with the killing curse, while the Master was forced to watch. When all his students had died in this way, the Master followed. I learned this from the single surviving student whom the Dark Lord had left alive to tell the tale, and who had been a friend of mine.
Professor Quirrell turned away, and when he turned back a moment later, he once again seemed calm and composed.
"Dark wizards cannot keep their tempers," Professor Quirrell said quietly. "It is a near-universal flaw of the species, and anyone who makes a habit of fighting them soon learns to rely on it. Understand that the Dark Lord did not win that day. His goal was to learn martial arts, and yet he left without a single lesson. The Dark Lord was foolish to wish that story retold. It did not show his strength, but rather an exploitable weakness."
Professor Quirrell's gaze focused on a single child in the classroom.
"Harry Potter,"
Professor Quirrell said.
"Yes?"
Harry said, his voice hoarse.
"What precisely did you do wrong today, Mr. Potter?"
Harry felt like he was going to throw up.
"I lost my temper."
"That is not precise," said Professor Quirrell. "I will describe it more exactly. There are many animals which have what are called dominance contests. They rush at each other with horns, trying to knock each other down, not gore each other. They fight with their paws, with claws sheathed. But why with their claws sheathed? Surely, if they used their claws, they would stand a better chance of winning. But then their enemy might unsheathe their claws as well, and instead of resolving the dominance contest with a winner and a loser, both of them might be severely hurt."
Professor Quirrell's gaze seemed to come straight out at Harry from the repeater screen.
"What you demonstrated today, Mr. Potter, is that, unlike those animals who keep their claws sheathed and accept the results, you do not know how to lose a dominance contest. When a Hogwarts professor challenged you, you did not back down. When it looked like you might lose, you unsheathed your claws, heedless of the danger. You escalated, and then you escalated again. It started with a slap at you from Professor Snape, who was obviously dominant over you. Instead of losing, you slapped back and lost 10 points from Ravenclaw. Soon, you were talking about leaving Hogwarts. The fact that you escalated even further in some unknown direction and somehow won at the end does not change the fact that you are an idiot."
"I understand,"
Harry said. His throat was dry.
"That had been precise."
"Frighteningly precise," Now that Professor Quirrell had said it, Harry could see in hindsight that it was an exactly accurate description of what had happened. When someone's model of you was that good, you had to wonder whether they were right about other things too, like your intent to kill.
"The next time, Mr. Potter, that you choose to escalate a contest rather than lose, you may lose all the stakes you place on the table. I cannot guess what they were today. I can guess that they were far, far too high for the loss of 10 house points."
Like the fate of magical Britain. That was what he'd done.
"You will protest that you were trying to help all of Hogwarts, a much more important goal, worthy of great risks. That is a lie. If you had been... I would have taken the slap, waited, and picked the best possible time to make my move,"
Harry said, his voice hoarse.
"But that would have meant losing, letting him be dominant over me. It was what the Dark Lord couldn't do with the master he wanted to learn from."
Professor Quirrell nodded.
"I see that you have understood perfectly. And so, Mr. Potter, today you are going to learn how to lose. I will not hear any objections, Mr. Potter. It is evident both that you need this, and that you are strong enough to take it. I assure you that your experience will not be so harsh as what I went through, though you may well remember it as the worst 15 minutes of your young life."
Harry swallowed.
"Professor Quirrell,"
he said in a small voice,
"can we do this some other time?"
"No,"
Professor Quirrell said simply.
"You are 5 days into your Hogwarts education, and already this has happened. Today is Friday. Our next defense class is on Wednesday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. No, we do not have time to wait."
There were a few laughs at this, but very few.
"Please consider it an order from your professor, Mr. Potter. What I would like to say is that otherwise I will not teach you any offensive spells, because I would then hear that you had severely hurt or even killed someone. Unfortunately, I am told that your fingers are already powerful weapons. Do not snap them at any time during this lesson."
More scattered laughter, sounding rather nervous. Harry felt like he might cry.
"Professor Quirrell, if you do anything like what you talked about, it's going to make me angry, and I really would rather not get angry again today."
"The point is not to avoid getting angry,"
Professor Quirrell said, his face looking grave.
"Anger is natural. You need to learn how to lose, even when you are angry. Or at least pretend to lose so that you can plan your vengeance. As I did with Mr. Goyle today. Unless, of course, any of you think he really is better."
"I'm not,"
shouted Mr. Goyle from his desk, sounding a little frantic.
"I know you didn't really lose. Please don't plan any vengeances."
Harry felt sick to his stomach. Professor Quirrell didn't know about his mysterious dark side.
"Professor, we really need to talk about this after class."
"We will,"
Professor Quirrell said in tones of a promise.
"After you learn how to lose."
His face was serious.
"It should go without saying that I will exclude anything which could injure you or even cause you significant pain. The pain will come from the difficulty of losing, instead of fighting back and escalating the battle until you win."
Harry's breath was coming in short, panicky pants. He was more frightened than he'd been after leaving the potions classroom.
"Professor Quirrell,"
he managed to say,
"I don't want you to get fired over this."
"I will not be," Professor Quirrell said. "If you tell them afterward that it was necessary, and this I trust you to do."
For a moment, Professor Quirrell's voice turned very dry.
"Believe me, they have tolerated worse in their hallways. This case will be exceptional only in that it happens in a classroom."
"Professor Quirrell,"
Harry whispered, but he thought his voice was still being repeated everywhere.
"Do you really believe that if I don't do this, I might hurt someone?"
"Yes,"
Professor Quirrell said simply.
Then,
Harry felt nauseous.
"I'll do it."
Professor Quirrell turned to regard the Slytherins.
"So, with the full approval of your teacher, and in such a fashion that Snape cannot be blamed for your actions, do any of you wish to show your dominance over the boy who lived? Shove him around, push him to the ground, hear him beg for your mercy."
5 hands went up.
"Everyone with your hand raised, you are an absolute idiot. What part of pretending to lose did you not understand? If Harry Potter does become the next Dark Lord, he will hunt you down and kill you after he graduates."
The 5 hands dropped abruptly back to their desks.
"I won't,"
Harry said, his voice coming out rather weakly.
"I swear never to take vengeance upon those who helped me learn to lose. Professor Quirrell, would you please stop that?"
Professor Quirrell sighed.
"I am sorry, Mr. Potter. I realize that you must find this equally annoying, whether you intend to become a Dark Lord or not. But those children also had an important life lesson to learn. Would it be acceptable if I awarded you a Quirrell point in apology?"
"Make it 2,
Harry said. There was a current of surprised laughter, diffusing some of the tension.
"Done,"
Professor Quirrell said.
"And after I graduate, I'm going to hunt you down and tickle you."
There was more laughter, although Professor Quirrell didn't smile. Harry felt like he was wrestling an anaconda, trying to force the conversation through the narrow course that would make people realize he wasn't a Dark Lord after all. Why was Professor Quirrell so suspicious of him?
"Professor," said Draco's unamplified voice, "it's also not my own ambition to become a stupid Dark Lord."
There was a shocked silence in the classroom.
"You don't have to do this,"
Harry almost blurted out, but checked himself in time. Draco might not wish it known that he was doing this out of friendship for Harry, or out of the desire to appear friendly. Calling that a desire to appear friendly made Harry feel small and mean. If Draco had intended to impress him, it was working perfectly. Professor Quirrell was regarding Draco gravely.
"You worry that you cannot pretend to lose, Mr. Malfoy. That this flaw which describes Mr. Potter also describes you. Surely your father taught you better."
"When it comes to talking, maybe," said Draco,
now on the repeater screen.
"Not when it comes to being shoved around and pushed to the ground. I want to be fully as strong as you, Professor Quirrell."
Professor Quirrell's eyebrows went up and stayed up.
"I am afraid, Mr. Malfoy," he said after a time, "that the arrangements I made for Mr. Potter, involving some older Slytherins who would be told afterward how stupid they were, would not carry over on to you. But it is my professional opinion that you are already very strong. Should I hear that you have failed, as Mr. Potter failed today, I will make the appropriate arrangements and apologize to you and whomever you have hurt. I do not think this will be necessary, however."
"I understand, Professor," said Draco.
Professor Quirrell looked over the class.
"Does anyone else wish to become strong?"
Some students glanced around nervously. Some, Harry thought from his back row, looked like they were opening their mouths but not saying anything. In the end, no one spoke.
"Draco Malfoy will be one of the generals in your year's armies," said Professor Quirrell, "should he deign to engage in that after-school activity. And now, Mr. Potter, please come forward."
Yes, Professor Quirrell had said, it must be in front of everyone, in front of your friends, because that is where Snape confronted you, and that is where you must learn to lose. So now, the first year watched, in magically enforced silence, and with requests from both Harry and the Professor not to intervene. Hermione had her face turned away, but she hadn't spoken out or even given him any sort of significant look, maybe because she'd been there in potions too. Harry stood on a soft blue mat, such as might be found in a Muggle dojo, which Professor Quirrell had laid out upon the floor for when Harry was pushed down. Harry was frightened of what he might do. If Professor Quirrell was right about his intent to kill. Harry's wand lay on Professor Quirrell's desk, not because Harry knew any spells that could defend him, but because otherwise, Harry thought, he might have tried to jam it through someone's eye socket. His pouch lay there, now containing his protected but still potentially fragile time-turner. Harry had pleaded with Professor Quirrell to transfigure him some boxing gloves and lock them on his hands. Professor Quirrell had given him a look of silent understanding and refused.
"I will not go for their eyes. I will not go for their eyes. I will not go for their eyes. It would be the end of my life in Hogwarts. I'll be arrested,"
Harry chanted to himself, trying to hammer the thought into his brain, hoping it would stay there if his intent to kill took over. Professor Quirrell returned, escorting 13 older Slytherins of different years. Harry recognized one of them as the one he'd hit with a pie. Two others from that confrontation were also present. The one who'd said to stop, "They really shouldn't do this," was missing.
"I repeat,"
Professor Quirrell said, sounding very stern.
"Potter is not to be really hurt. Any and all accidents will be treated as deliberate. Do you understand?"
The older Slytherins nodded, grinning.
"Then please feel free to take the boy who lived down a few pegs,"
Professor Quirrell said with a twisted smile that only the first years understood. By some form of mutual consent, the pie target was at the front of the group.
"Potter," said Professor Quirrell, "meet Mr. Peregrine Derrick. He is better than you, and he is about to show you that."
Derrick strode forward, and Harry's brain screamed discordantly, "He must not run away. He must not fight back." Derrick stopped an arm's length away from Harry. Harry wasn't angry yet, just frightened. And that meant he beheld a teenage boy, fully half a meter taller than himself, with clearly defined muscles, facial hair, and a grin of terrible anticipation.
"Ask him not to hurt you," Professor Quirrell said. "Perhaps if he sees that you're pathetic enough, he'll decide that you're boring and go away."
There was laughter from the watching older Slytherins.
"Please,"
Harry said, his voice faltering.
"Don't hurt me."
"That didn't sound very sincere," said Professor Quirrell.
Derek's smile widened. The clumsy imbecile was looking very superior, and Harry's blood temperature was dropping.
"Please don't hurt me,"
Harry tried again. Professor Quirrell shook his head.
"How in Merlin's name did you manage to make that sound like an insult, Potter? There is only one response you can possibly expect from Mr. Derrick."
Derrick stepped forward deliberately and bumped into Harry. Harry staggered back a few feet and, before he could stop himself, straightened up icily.
"Wrong," said Professor Quirrell. "Wrong, wrong, wrong."
"You bumped into me, Potter," Derrick said. "Apologize."
"I'm sorry."
"You don't sound sorry," said Derrick.
Harry's eyes widened in indignation.
He had managed to make that sound pleading.
Derrick pushed him hard, and Harry fell to the mat on his hands and knees. The blue fabric seemed to waver in Harry's vision, not far away. He was beginning to doubt Professor Quirrell's real motives in teaching this so-called lesson. A foot rested on Harry's buttocks, and a moment later Harry was pushed hard to the side, sending him sprawling on his back. Derrick laughed.
"This is fun," he said.
All he had to do was say it was over and report the whole thing to the headmaster's office. That would be the end of this defense professor and his ill-fated stay at Hogwarts, and Professor McGonagall would be angry about that, but an image of Professor McGonagall's face flashed before his eyes. She didn't look angry, just sad.
"Now tell him that he's better than you, Potter," said Professor Quirrell's voice.
"You're better than me."
Harry started to raise himself, and Derrick put a foot on his chest and shoved him back down to the mat. The world was becoming transparent as crystal. Lines of action and their consequences stretched out before him in utter clarity. The fool wouldn't be expecting him to strike back. A quick hit in the groin would stun him for long enough for...
"Try again!"
said Professor Quirrell, and with a sudden sharp motion Harry rolled and sprang to his feet and whirled on where stood his real enemy, the defense professor. Professor Quirrell said,
"You have no patience."
Harry faltered. His mind, well honed in pessimism, drew a picture of a wizened old man with blood pouring from his mouth after Harry had ripped his tongue out. A moment later, Derek pushed Harry to the mat again, and then sat down on him, sending Harry's breath whooshing out.
"Stop!"
Harry screamed.
"Please, stop!"
"Better," said Professor Quirrell. "That even sounded sincere."
It had been. That was the horrible thing. The sickening thing. It had been sincere. Harry was panting rapidly, fear and cold anger both flushing through him.
"Lose," said Professor Quirrell.
"I... lose,"
Harry forced out.
"I like it,"
Derek said from on top of him.
"Lose some more."
Hands shoved Harry, sending him stumbling across the circle of older Slytherins to another set of hands that shoved him again. Harry had long since passed the point of trying not to cry, and was now just trying not to fall down.
"What are you, Potter?" said Derek.
"Loser! I lose! I give up! You win! You're better than me! Please, stop!"
Harry tripped over a foot and went crashing to the ground, hands not quite able to catch himself. He was dazed for a moment, then began struggling to his feet again.
"Enough!"
said Professor Quirrell's voice, sounding sharp enough to cut iron.
"Step away from Mr. Potter."
Harry saw the surprised looks on their faces, the chill in his blood, which had been flowing and ebbing, smiled in cold satisfaction. Then Harry collapsed to the mat. Professor Quirrell talked. There were gasps from the older Slytherins.
"And I believe the Scion of Malfoy has something he wants to explain to you as well,"
finished Professor Quirrell. Draco's voice started talking. His voice sounded almost as sharp as Professor Quirrell's. It had acquired the same cadence Draco had used to intimidate his father, and it was saying things like, "Could have put Slytherin House in jeopardy," and "Who knows how many allies in this school alone," and "Total lack of awareness, never mind cunning," and "Dull thugs, useful for nothing but lackeys," and... something in Harry's hindbrain, despite everything he knew, was designating Draco as an ally. Harry ached all over, was probably bruised, his body felt cold, his mind utterly exhausted. He tried to think of Fawkes's song, but without the phoenix present he couldn't remember the melody, and when he tried to imagine it he couldn't seem to think of anything except a bird chirping. Then Draco stopped talking, and Professor Quirrell told the older Slytherins they were dismissed, and Harry opened his eyes and struggled to sit up.
"Wait!"
Harry said, forcing the words out.
"There's something I want to say to them."
"Wait on Mr. Potter,"
Professor Quirrell said coldly to the departing Slytherins. Harry swayed to his feet. He was careful not to look in the direction of his classmates. He didn't want to see how they were looking at him now. He didn't want to see their pity. So, instead, Harry looked at the older Slytherins, who still seemed to be in a state of shock. They stared back at him. Dread was on their faces. His dark side, when it was in control, had held to the imagination of this moment, and went on pretending to lose. Harry said,
"No one will—"
"Stop," said Professor Quirrell. "If that's what I think it is, please wait until after they're gone. They'll hear about it later. We all have our lessons to learn, Mr. Potter."
"All right," Harry said.
"You go."
The older Slytherins fled, and the door closed behind them.
"No one's to take any revenge on them," Harry said hoarsely. "That's a request to anyone who considers themselves my friend. I had my lesson to learn. They helped me learn it. They had their lesson to learn, too. It's over. If you tell this story, make sure to tell that part, too."
Harry turned to look at Professor Quirrell.
"You lost," said Professor Quirrell, his voice gentle for the first time. It sounded strange coming from the professor, like his voice shouldn't even be able to do that. Harry had lost. There had been moments when the cold anger had faded entirely, replaced by fear, and during those moments he had begged the older Slytherins, and he had meant it.
"And are you yet alive?" said Professor Quirrell, still with the strange gentleness.
Harry managed to nod.
"Not all losing is like this," said Professor Quirrell. "There are compromises and negotiated surrenders. There are other ways to placate bullies. There is a whole art form to manipulating others by letting them be dominant over you. But first, losing must be thinkable. Will you remember how you lost?"
"Yes."
"Will you be able to lose?"
"I think so."
"I think so, too."
Professor Quirrell bowed so low that his thin hair almost touched the floor.
"Congratulations, Harry Potter. You win."
There was no single source, no first mover. The applause started all at once, like a massive thunderclap. Harry couldn't keep the shock from his face. He risked a glance at his classmates, and he saw their faces showing not pity, but awe. The applause was coming from Ravenclaw, Gryffindor, and Hufflepuff, and even Slytherin, probably because Draco Malfoy was applauding too. Some students were standing up from their chairs, and half of Gryffindor was standing on their desks. So, Harry stood there, swaying, letting their respect wash over him, feeling stronger, and maybe even a little healed. Professor Quirrell waited for the applause to die away. It took quite a while.
"Surprised, Mr. Potter,"
Professor Quirrell said. His voice sounded amused.
"You have just found out that the real world does not always work like your worst nightmares. Yes, if you had been some poor, anonymous boy being abused, then they would probably have respected you less afterward. pitied you even as they comforted you from their loftier perches. That is human nature, I'm afraid. But you, they already know for a figure of power, and they saw you confront your fear and keep confronting it, even though you could have walked away at any time. Did you think less of me when I told you that I had deliberately endured being spat upon?
Harry felt a burning sensation in his throat and frantically clamped down. He didn't trust this miraculous respect enough to start crying again in front of it.
Your extraordinary achievement in my class deserves an extraordinary reward, Harry Potter. Please accept it with my compliments on behalf of my house, and remember from this day forward that not all Slytherins are alike. There are Slytherins, and then there are Slytherins.
Professor Quirrell was smiling quite broadly as he said this.
51 points to Ravenclaw!
There was a shocked pause, and then pandemonium broke out among the Ravenclaw students, howling and whistling and cheering. And in the same moment, Harry felt something wrong about that. Professor McGonagall had been right. There should have been consequences. There should have been a cost and a price to be paid. You couldn't just put everything back the way it was like that. But Harry saw the elated faces in Ravenclaw and knew he couldn't possibly say no. His brain made a suggestion. It was a good suggestion. Harry could not even believe his brain was still keeping him upright, let alone producing good suggestions.
Professor Quirrell,
Harry said as clearly as he could through his burning throat.
You are everything a member of your house should be, and I think you must be just what Salazar Slytherin had in mind when he helped found Hogwarts. I thank you and your house.
Draco was very slightly nodding and subtly turning his finger. Keep going.
And I think this calls for 3 cheers for Slytherin. With me, everyone?
Harry paused.
Huzzah!
Only a few people managed to join in on the first try.
Huzzah!
This time, most of Ravenclaw was in on it. That was almost all of Ravenclaw, a scattering of Hufflepuffs, and around a quarter of Gryffindor. Draco's hand moved into a small, quick, thumbs-up gesture. Most of the Slytherins had expressions of sheer shock. A few were staring at Professor Quirrell in wonder. Blaise Zabini was looking at Harry with a calculating, intrigued expression. Professor Quirrell bowed.
"Thank you, Harry Potter,"
he said, still with that broad smile. He turned to the class.
"Now, believe it or not, we still have 30 minutes left in this session, and that is enough to introduce the simple shield. Mr. Potter, of course, is going off and taking a well-earned rest."
I can...
Idiot!
Professor Quirrell said fondly. The class was already laughing.
Your classmates can teach you afterward, or I'll tutor you privately if that's what it takes. But right now, you're going through the third door from the left in the back of the stage, where you will find a bed, an assortment of exceptionally tasty snacks, and some extremely light reading from the Hogwarts library. You may not take anything else with you, particularly not your textbooks. Now, go.
Harry went. Chapter 20. Bayes' Theorem. Harry stared up at the grey ceiling of the small room, from where he lay on the portable, yet soft, bed that had been placed there. He'd eaten quite a lot of Professor Quirrell's snacks, intricate confections of chocolate and other substances, dusted with sparkling sprinkles and jewelled with tiny sugar gems, looking highly expensive and proving, in fact, to be quite tasty. Harry hadn't felt the least bit guilty about it either. This he had earned. He hadn't tried to sleep. Harry had a feeling that he wouldn't like what happened when he closed his eyes. He hadn't tried to read. He wouldn't have been able to focus. Funny how Harry's brain just seemed to keep on running and running, never shutting down no matter how tired it got. It got stupider, but it refused to switch off. But there was, there really and truly was, a feeling of triumph. Anti-Dark Lord Harry program plus 1 point didn't begin to cover it. Harry wondered what the Sorting Hat would say now if he could put it on his head. No wonder Professor Quirrell had accused Harry of heading down the path of a Dark Lord. Harry had been too slow on the uptake. He should have seen the parallel right away.
"Understand that the Dark Lord did not win that day. His goal was to learn martial arts, and yet he left without a single lesson."
Harry had entered the potions class with the intent to learn potions. He had left without a single lesson. And Professor Quirrell had heard, and understood with frightening precision, and reached out and yanked Harry off that path, the path that led to his becoming a copy of you-know-who. There was a knock at the door.
"Classes are over," said Professor Quirrell's quiet voice.
Harry approached the door and found himself suddenly nervous. Then the tension diminished as he heard Professor Quirrell's footsteps moving away from the door.
"What on earth is that about? Is it what's going to get him fired eventually?"
Harry opened the door and saw that Professor Quirrell was now waiting several body lengths away.
"Does Professor Quirrell feel it too?"
They walked across the now deserted stage to Professor Quirrell's desk, which Professor Quirrell leaned on, and Harry, as before, stopped short of the dais.
"So,"
Professor Quirrell said. There was a friendly sense about him now, even though his face still kept its usual seriousness.
"What was it you wanted to talk to me about, Mr. Potter?"
"I have a mysterious dark side."
But Harry couldn't just blurt it out like that.
"Professor Quirrell,"
Harry said,
"am I off the path to becoming a Dark Lord now?"
Professor Quirrell looked at Harry.
"Mr. Potter,"
he said solemnly with only a slight grin,
"a word of advice. There is such a thing as a performance which is too perfect. Real people who have just been beaten and humiliated for 15 minutes do not stand up and graciously forgive their enemies. It is the sort of thing you do when you are trying to convince everyone you're not dark, not..."
"I can't believe this! You can't have every possible observation confirm your theory!"
"And that was a trifle too much indignation."
"What on earth do I have to do to convince you?"
to convince me that you harbour no ambitions of becoming a Dark Lord?" said Professor Quirrell, now looking outright amused. "I suppose you could just raise your right hand."
"What?"
Harry said blankly.
"But I can raise my right hand whether or not I..."
Harry stopped, feeling rather stupid.
"Indeed," said Professor Quirrell. "You can just as easily do it either way. There is nothing you can do to convince me, because I would know that was exactly what you were trying to do. And if we are to be even more precise, then while I suppose it is barely possible that perfectly good people exist, even though I have never met one, it is nonetheless improbable that someone would be beaten for 15 minutes, and then stand up and feel a great surge of kindly forgiveness for his attackers. On the other hand, it is less improbable that a young child would imagine this as the role to play in order to convince his teacher and classmates that he is not the next Dark Lord. The import of an act lies not in what that act resembles on the surface, Mr. Potter, but in the state of mind which makes that act more or less probable."
Harry blinked. He'd just had the dichotomy between the representative heuristic and the Bayesian definition of evidence explained to him by a wizard.
"But then again," said Professor Quirrell, "anyone can want to impress their friends. That need not be dark. So, without it being any kind of admission, Mr. Potter, tell me honestly, what thought was in your mind at the moment when you forbade any vengeance? Was that thought a true impulse to forgiveness, or was it an awareness of how your classmates would see the act?"
"Sometimes we make our own phoenix song."
But Harry didn't say it out loud. It was clear that Professor Quirrell wouldn't believe him, and would probably respect him less for trying to utter such a transparent lie. After a few moments of silence, Professor Quirrell smiled with satisfaction.
"Believe it or not, Mr. Potter," said the professor, "you need not fear me for having discovered your secret. I am not going to tell you to give up on becoming the next Dark Lord. If I could turn back the hands of time and somehow remove that ambition from the mind of my child self, the self of this present time would not benefit from the alteration. For as long as I thought that was my goal, it drove me to study and learn and refine myself and become stronger. We become what we are meant to be by following our desires wherever they lead. That is the insight of Salazar. Ask me to show you to the library section which holds those same books I read as a 13-year-old, and I will happily lead the way."
"For the love of crap!"
Harry said, and sat down on the hard marble floor, and then lay back on the floor, staring up at the distant arches of the ceiling. It was as close as he could come to collapsing in despair without hurting himself.
"Still too much indignation," observed Professor Quirrell.
Harry wasn't looking, but he could hear the suppressed laughter in the voice. Then Harry realized.
"Actually, I think I know what's confusing you here,"
Harry said.
That was what I wanted to talk to you about, in fact. Professor Quirrell, I think that what you're seeing is my mysterious dark side.
There was a pause.
Your dark side?
Harry sat up. Professor Quirrell was regarding him with one of the strangest expressions Harry had seen on anyone's face, let alone anyone as dignified as Professor Quirrell.
"It happens when I get angry," Harry explained. "My blood runs cold. Everything gets cold. Everything seems perfectly clear. In retrospect, it's been with me for a while. In my first year of Muggle school, someone tried to take away my ball during recess, and I held it behind my back and kicked him in the solar plexus, which I'd read was a weak point, and the other kids didn't bother me after that. And I bit a maths teacher when she wouldn't accept my dominance. And it's only just recently that I've been under enough stress to notice that it's an actual, you know, mysterious dark side, and not just an anger management problem like the school psychologist said. And I don't have any super magical powers when it happens. That was one of the first things I checked."
Professor Quirrell rubbed his nose.
"Let me think about this," he said.
Harry waited in silence for a full minute. He used that time to stand up, which was more difficult than he'd expected.
"Well," Professor Quirrell said after a while, "I suppose there was something you could say that would convince me."
"I have already guessed that my dark side is really just another part of me, and that the answer isn't to never become angry, but to learn to stay in control by accepting it. I'm not dumb or anything, and I've seen this story enough times to know where it's going, but it's hard, and you seem like the person to help me."
"Well, yes. Very perspicacious of you, Mr. Potter, I must say. That side of you is, as you seem to have already surmised, your intent to kill, which, as you say, is a part of you."
"And needs to be trained,"
Harry said, completing the pattern.
"And needs to be trained, yes."
That strange expression was still on Professor Quirrell's face.
"Mr. Potter, if you truly do not wish to be the next Dark Lord, then what was the ambition which the Sorting Hat tried to convince you to abandon, the ambition for which you were sorted into Slytherin?"
"I was sorted into Ravenclaw!"
"Mr. Potter,"
said Professor Quirrell, now with a much more usual-looking dry smile.
"I know you are accustomed to everyone around you being a fool, but please do not mistake me for one of them. The likelihood that the Sorting Hat would play its first prank in 800 years while it was upon your head is so small as to not be worth considering. I suppose it is barely possible that you snapped your fingers and invented some simple and clever way to defeat the anti-tampering spells upon the hat, though I myself can think of no such method. But by far the most probable explanation is that Dumbledore decided he was not happy with the hat's choice for the boy who lived. This is evident to anyone with the tiniest smidgen of common sense, so your secret is safe at Hogwarts."
Harry opened his mouth, then closed it again with a feeling of complete helplessness. Professor Quirrell was wrong, but wrong in such a convincing way that Harry was starting to think that it simply was the rational judgment given the evidence available to Professor Quirrell. There were times, never predictable times, but still, sometimes, when you would get improbable evidence and the best knowable guess would be wrong. If you had a medical test that was only wrong one time in 1,000, sometimes it would still be wrong anyway.
Can I ask you never to repeat what I'm about to say?
Said Harry.
Absolutely, said Professor Quirrell. Consider me asked.
Harry wasn't a fool either.
Can I consider you to have said yes?
Very good, Mr. Potter. You may indeed so consider.
Professor Quirrell?
I won't repeat what you're about to say,
Professor Quirrell said, smiling. They both laughed. Then Harry turned serious again.
The Sorting Hat did seem to think I was going to end up as a Dark Lord unless I went to Hufflepuff,
Harry said.
But I don't want to be one.
Mr. Potter, said Professor Quirrell, don't take this the wrong way. I promise you will not be graded on the answer. I only want to know your own honest reply. Why not?
Harry had that helpless feeling again. Thou shalt not become a Dark Lord was such an obvious theorem in his moral system that it was hard to describe the actual proof steps.
People would get hurt?
Surely you've wanted to hurt people, said Professor Quirrell. You wanted to hurt those bullies today. Being a Dark Lord means that people you want to hurt get hurt.
Harry floundered for words and then decided to simply go with the obvious.
First of all, just because I want to hurt someone doesn't mean it's right.
What makes something right if not your wanting it?
Ah,
Harry said.
Preference utilitarianism.
Pardon me, said Professor Quirrell.
It's the ethical theory that the good is what satisfies the preference of the most people.
No,
Professor Quirrell said. His fingers rubbed the bridge of his nose.
I don't think that's quite what I was trying to say. Mr. Potter, in the end, people all do what they want to do. Sometimes people give names like right to things they want to do. But how could we possibly act on anything but our own desires?
Well, obviously,
Harry said.
I couldn't act on moral considerations if they lacked the power to move me. But that doesn't mean my wanting to hurt those Slytherins has the power to move me more than moral considerations.
Professor Quirrell blinked.
Not to mention,
Harry said,
being a Dark Lord would mean that a lot of innocent bystanders got hurt too.
Why does that matter to you?
Professor Quirrell said.
What have they done for you?
Harry laughed.
Oh, now that was around as subtle as Atlas shrugged.
Pardon me?
Professor Quirrell said again.
It's a book that my parents wouldn't let me read because they thought it would corrupt me. So, of course, I read it anyway, and I was offended they thought I would fall for any traps that obvious. Blah, blah, blah. Appeal to my sense of superiority. Other people are trying to keep me down. Blah, blah, blah.
So you're saying I need to make my traps less obvious?
Said Professor Quirrell. He tapped a finger on his cheek, looking thoughtful.
I can work on that.
They both laughed.
But to stay with the current question, said Professor Quirrell, what have all these other people done for you?
Other people have done huge amounts for me, Harry said. My parents took me in when my parents died because they were good people, and to become a Dark Lord is to betray that.
Professor Quirrell was silent for a time.
I confess, said Professor Quirrell quietly, when I was your age, that thought could not have ever come to me.
I'm sorry, Harry said.
Don't be, said Professor Quirrell. It was long ago, and I resolved my parental issues to my own satisfaction. So, you are held back by the thought of your parents' disapproval? Does that mean that if they died in an accident, there would be nothing left to stop you from?
No,
Harry said.
Just no. It is their impulse to kindness which sheltered me. That impulse is not only in my parents, and that impulse is what would be betrayed.
In any case, Mr. Potter, you have not answered my original question, said Professor Quirrell finally. What is your ambition?
Oh, said Harry.
He organized his thoughts.
To understand everything important there is to know about the universe. Apply that knowledge to become omnipotent, and use that power to rewrite reality because I have some objections to the way it works now.
There was a slight pause.
Forgive me if this is a stupid question, Mr. Potter, said Professor Quirrell. But are you sure you did not just confess to wanting to be a Dark Lord?
That's only if you use your power for evil, explained Harry. If you use the power for good, you're a Light Lord.
I see,
Professor Quirrell said. He tapped his other cheek with a finger.
I suppose I can work with that. But, Mr. Potter, while the scope of your ambition is worthy of Salazar himself, how exactly do you propose to go about it? Is step one to become a great fighting wizard, or head unspeakable, or minister of magic, or...
Step one is to become a scientist.
Professor Quirrell was looking at Harry as if he'd just turned into a cat.
A scientist,
Professor Quirrell said after a while. Harry nodded.
A scientist,
repeated Professor Quirrell.
Yes,
Harry said.
I shall achieve my objectives through the power of science.
A scientist?
Said Professor Quirrell. There was genuine indignation on his face, and his voice had grown stronger and sharper.
You could be the best of all my students, the greatest fighting wizard to have come out of Hogwarts in 5 decades. I cannot picture you wasting your days in a white lab coat doing pointless things to rats.
Hey, said Harry, there's more to science than that. Not that there's anything wrong with experimenting on rats, of course, but science is how you go about understanding and controlling the universe.
Fool,
said Professor Quirrell in a voice of quiet bitter intensity.
"You are a fool, Harry Potter."
He passed a hand over his face, and when that hand had passed, his face was calmer.
"Or, more likely, you have not yet found your true ambition. May I strongly recommend that you try to become a Dark Lord instead? I will do anything I can to help as a matter of public service."
"You don't like science?"
Harry said slowly.
"Why not?"
"Those fool muggles will kill us all some day."
Professor Quirrell's voice had grown louder.
"They will end it. End all of it."
Harry was feeling a bit lost here.
"What are we talking about here? Nuclear weapons?"
"Yes, nuclear weapons."
Professor Quirrell was almost shouting now.
"Even he who must not be named never used those. Perhaps because he didn't want to rule over a heap of ash. They never should have been made, and it will only get worse with time."
Professor Quirrell was standing up straight instead of leaning on his desk.
"There are gates you do not open. There are seals you do not breach. The fools who can't resist meddling are killed by the lesser perils early on, and the survivors all know that there are secrets you do not share with anyone who lacks the intelligence and the discipline to discover them for themselves. Every powerful wizard knows that. Even the most terrible dark wizards know that. And those idiot muggles can't seem to figure it out. The eager little fools who discovered the secret of nuclear weapons didn't keep it to themselves. They told their fool politicians, and now we must live under the constant threat of annihilation."
This was a rather different way of looking at things than Harry had grown up with. It had never occurred to him that nuclear physicists should have formed a conspiracy of silence to keep the secret of nuclear weapons from anyone not smart enough to be a nuclear physicist. The thought was intriguing, if nothing else. Would they have had secret passwords? Would they have had masks? Actually, for all Harry knew, there were all sorts of incredibly destructive secrets which physicists kept to themselves, and the secret of nuclear weapons was the only one that had escaped into the wild. The world would look the same to him either way.
"I'll have to think about that,"
Harry said to Professor Quirrell.
"It's a new idea to me, and one of the hidden secrets of science passed down from a few rare teachers to their grad students is how to avoid flushing new ideas down the toilet the instant you hear one you don't like."
Professor Quirrell blinked again.
"Is there any sort of science you do approve of?"
said Harry.
Medicine, maybe."
"Space travel," said Professor Quirrell. "But the muggles seem to be dragging their feet on the one project which might have let wizardkind escape this planet before they blow it up."
Harry nodded.
"I'm a big fan of the space program, too. At least we have that much in common."
Professor Quirrell looked at Harry. Something flickered in the professor's eyes.
"I will have your word, your promise, and your oath never to speak of what follows."
"You have it,"
Harry said immediately.
"See to it that you keep your oath, or you will not like the results," said Professor Quirrell. "I will now cast a rare and powerful spell, not on you, but on the classroom around us. Stand still so that you do not touch the boundaries of the spell once it has been cast. You must not interact with the magic which I am maintaining. Look only, otherwise I will end the spell."
Professor Quirrell paused.
"And Try not to fall over.
Harry nodded, puzzled and anticipatory. Professor Quirrell raised his wand and said something that Harry's ears and mind couldn't grasp at all, words that bypassed awareness and vanished into oblivion. The marble, in a short radius around Harry's feet, stayed constant. All the other marble of the floor vanished. The walls and ceilings vanished. Harry stood on a small circle of white marble in the midst of an endless field of stars, burning, terribly bright and unwavering. There was no earth, no moon, no sun that Harry recognized. Professor Quirrell stood in the same place as before, floating in the midst of the star field. The Milky Way was already visible as a great wash of light, and it grew brighter as Harry's vision adjusted to the darkness. The sight wrenched at Harry's heart like nothing he had ever seen.
"Are we in space?"
"No,"
said Professor Quirrell. His voice was sad and reverent.
"But it is a true image."
Tears came into Harry's eyes. He wiped them away frantically.
He would not miss this for some stupid water blurring his vision.
The stars were no longer tiny jewels set in a giant velvet dome, as they were in the night sky of Earth. Here, there was no sky above, no surrounding sphere.